Hello and welcome to The Art of Imagination. I'm Tess from Jagged Edge Arts, and today I'm speaking with Welsh actor and singer Gwydion Rees, who not only has a wonderful voice, but is also a fantastic actor. He's done a lot of theater, including playing Alan Turing in the very creative play To Kill a Machine. He's been in musicals, concerts, and also quite a bit of TV with guest and supporting roles in major crime dramas like Hinterland and 35 Days. And more recently, he played the very sketchy prime suspect Ryan in the murder mystery series Kledai, aka The One That Got Away. I really liked him in that, but my favorite performance is his starring role as Jamie in the psychological drama series Crisis, which follows a psychiatric nurse who is himself falling into an increasingly severe state of psychosis. It's disturbing, emotional, very powerful, and his performance is absolutely heart-wrenching. It's really stayed with me. And in addition to the other characters I've seen him play, the diversity he has in his performances and his musical background, he's someone I'm really hoping to see a lot more of on screen internationally, because these are performances that deserve to be seen on a larger scale. So Gwydion, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I really love the work that you guys are doing in Wales in terms of music, theater, film, and especially television. And it's great to see these Welsh language productions getting picked up internationally more and more. I mean, we've got shows like 35 Days on Amazon in the US now.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that? No, it's great. Because not long ago, I don't think you would have seen all Welsh language shows on these major international streaming services.
Yeah, brilliant.
So I'm all for it. I think it's great for people in North America and other English-speaking countries to have access to those series. Are you a native Welsh speaker? Is that your first language?
Yeah, so I grew up fluent, first language Welsh. In all my childhood in the household, we talked to each other in Welsh. I really only started to learn English in the latter years of my primary school. So well, still now, my thoughts come to me in Welsh first, and I'm not sure what the ratio or timing of the translation into English, even when acting or talking, I don't know what that is. But with my family, we're first language Welsh is the language of the house, really.
Oh, that's so nice. I think Wales has done an incredible job of preserving the language in comparison to pretty much every other Celtic language, which almost nobody natively speaks anymore. And it's really sad. So to hear Welsh thriving in younger generations and hearing people our age use it as a first language is something that I find really inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you said in terms of the TV dramas that are being distributed now, maybe across the world, especially in particular, the back-to-back stuff or just the Welsh language stuff is kind of another stepping stone to strengthen that longevity for the language to travel and be as strong as it can possibly be, really.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be cool to, well, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you. I'm not a Welsh speaker, but I think it's pretty cool just objectively that people who didn't even grow up in Wales are really interested in the language just from seeing all these shows. You know, people who either have Welsh heritage or just really like the language and want to learn it. And they're doing that just based on these TV series and how excited they are about them.
Yeah, I think that especially when you have some of the TV series set in particular areas of Wales as well, that they're totally different in terms of their rhythms and dialects and feeling to, you know, the people within those communities. Maybe people can relate to them in some way from where they grew up, even if it's in America, Canada, or whatever, you know.
Right.
Sometimes I kind of forget about, especially in those productions that I've been involved in, that when I'm doing the Welsh language, I haven't really thought about, oh, this might be seen in another country, the other side of the world. So you saying that 35 Days is on Amazon, it's kind of, oh, it's, yeah. In the present, when you're in those productions, when they go from Welsh to English, it's just another set of sides or script that you've got to tackle and maneuver around, really. So, no, it's great, I think.
I've heard a lot in talking to Welsh people about the importance of the arts in Welsh language culture specifically. And I know that you have a background in singing and theater and now film. Does that involvement go all the way back through childhood? And was it very integrated into your life as part of the culture as a Welsh speaker?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, probably the Eisteddfod or the Er of Eisteddfod, which is a bit of a focal point for youngsters that want to either perform, or it gets an opportunity to flourish within the schools as well, because there's a lot of choral singing, which probably stems from all those smaller communities, farming communities, where they would go to chapel and sing.
Oh, interesting.
Even with my two boys now in school, it's kind of, oh, your classroom is going to compete in the Eisteddfod, and they think it's part of the curriculum. So they say, I'll just have to sing now, until the eldest kind of realized he had a choice, which he said, oh, do I have to? But for me personally, I did a lot of competing on stages and singing, I would say, first and foremost, which kind of probably led me to thinking that, oh, I kind of enjoy it, that crossover of me thinking about doing acting probably came from singing to musical theatre and then the story behind the song, which drove me to the fascination with what the character is and the stories and stuff like that.
I love that it seems to be so woven into your culture in that area. And I have to say, you're an amazing singer. I came across a broadcast of you, two of them actually, where you were singing Gethsemane from JC Superstar, which, for anyone not familiar with musicals, is widely considered one of the most difficult songs for a tenor to sing. And you made it look easy. I was impressed by how smoothly you hit those notes. All those high notes were so beautiful, so smooth. And then you were also fully acting out the song with all the emotion as well. Did you find that song as hard to perform as everyone says it is?
Gethsemane, yeah, it is a big old sing, that one. But there's a singer-songwriter who played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar from Swansea, Steve Balsamo. I
Yes.
came across a clip of him singing it, and I just thought, oh, it was unbelievable. So when I was doing some singing competitions, there's a festival called Llangollen, which is more of a worldwide cultural where lots of different countries come to compete. I did a musical theatre competition there. And I suppose I was just looking to learn a repertoire, and probably that song stood out as being a very tough thing for a tenor to sing. And I thought it would challenge me. So I kind of took inspiration from Steve Balsamo's performance. And as you said, if you have an off day, you can't really sing it because it is about, I don't know, it's about 4.5 minutes long, and the end is probably the most difficult part. So there's an element of stamina in it as well.
Right.
But what I love about that song is it was the kind of start of me investigating how to portray a character or a story when the stakes are so high, to kind of looking at the character maybe more than the song, even though there's a lot of singing to do.
It's really interesting to hear you say that because Steve Balsamo's performance of Gethsemane at that musicals concert in the Netherlands is the one by which I judge all performances of that song. It's just mind-blowing. The entire performance hits so hard. Like you said, not just the singing, but the acting of it too. It just leaves you kind of shaken by the end. So when I saw you sing it, that was the first thing that came to my head because you definitely performed it in a similar style. And I think it's easy to forget just how hard that song is when you hear someone do it so well. Are there any songs that you haven't done yet and might want to sing knowing they'd be even more of a challenge?
I'm trying to think of like show songs now. In terms of the notes and musicality of it, probably Sondheim stuff is a bit more intricate, and I would say those are pretty difficult to grasp if you don't get them right. I love Sunday in the Park with George. I actually saw another Welshman, Daniel Evans, play the lead on Broadway when we had like an exchange with the college. And it's Sondheim at its best, kind of the intricacies of breaks and beats and irregular musicality. So if I had to do a Sondheim show, that would be a challenge, probably.
Is that also partly because of the need to act it as well and actually play a character through the song as opposed to just singing, for instance, more classical music for a concert? Because I know you've done musicals, but it sounds like your background was primarily in singing for a long time rather than that specific type of performance that requires combining the music with real acting.
So it was more straight singing, the Eisteddfod singing, which is probably a bit more structured. I wouldn't say classical singing. My brother is actually a classical singer, so maybe discipline of singing, that background helped me with a song like Gethsemane, maybe closer to, I wouldn't say operatic singing, but it does give you a wider range, I think.
I actually saw, I think, one clip of you and your brother, and that was my first thought was a very operatic voice.
But what I think I learned over time was to not be too precious about like blemishes in the performance, because especially with those types of songs, if you're playing a character in distress, that you can't be thinking about that you haven't really nailed a particular note correctly, because I think the emotion and the character kind of overrides it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I wouldn't say I would want to sing the song messy, but the emotion of the character kind of trumps it. I would kind of go for that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially in those types of songs, that the emotion is such a big part of it. Like, I have certainly seen performances where it was musically perfect, but it was kind of like empty. You know, it didn't feel like they were really capturing what the song was about. So, yeah, I think finding that balance is not an easy thing to do. So, how did you get from there to film or TV? There's obviously a big jump from stage to screen where the process is so much more disjointed, and you've got a camera right in your face. What pulled you into doing that instead of just staying in live performance? Because at this point, you spent a lot of time working in both mediums.
I would say that the early part of my career was predominantly theatre, which I love, and then kind of interspersed with different screen jobs. And one of my first jobs was a one-man show, which was kind of an extension of me learning on the job, the discipline of having to be on stage for an hour 25 and then doing multiple characters and all of that, which was great. And then one of the first maybe back-to-back jobs I did was Hinterland, and playing smaller parts, you're quite eager at the start to maybe embellish a character too much, trying to push it too much. But you learn over time, again, that you're stepping into a bigger machine, that you need to fit the piece of the puzzle, really, because you can kind of sabotage to an extent a scene with trying to overreach or overperform, I think.
I'd say it's interesting if you can find that balance to stand out in a smaller role and make an impression without going overboard. Like, the first thing I saw you in was Kreith, and even though it was only a few scenes, your character was kind of unhinged and stood out to me in that short time, to the point where I immediately recognized you in the next thing I saw, even though you look totally different, because you did manage to make a strong impression in the time that you had. So I understand wanting to be careful about overdoing a performance when you're coming in as a guest, but if you can manage to have an impact on viewers in that short time without taking it to an extreme and becoming a distraction, I feel like you've done your job. But would you say it's harder to step into an existing show as a guest character where there's this pressure to do well in a very limited time frame, or to take on a role like Jamie in Crisis, where it's a huge amount of work and you're essentially responsible for carrying the narrative, but you have at least more time to ease into the role and get a feel for the character as you go along from one episode to the next?
For me personally, I've talked about this with different actors before. I think stepping into a show with a smaller role, it's like everything for me gets more hyper-focused. I remember doing a small role on The Light in the Hall.
Yeah, you're a policeman.
Drama. Yeah. So I remember prepping for a scene for that, and it was just me as a police officer questioning one of the more regular characters. And I was just thinking that you get stressed out about four lines of questioning that you've got to say, and you know that you're just in for maybe that day or another 4 or 5 days. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't remember the lines.
Oh, no.
Because you think that you've just got to service the scene and help the story move along without, again, trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel or think that, oh, this police officer is going to have a really weird character trait. You just got to really hone in on on kind of the basics of it. So when you talk about Crisis, the crisis is on paper, the fact that they decided to put the lead character in every scene for the whole shoot.
Are you in every scene in that show?
Yeah, it's every scene.
Are you? Wow. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. That's intense.
But it's for me, it's daunting before you start it, because you think you've got to lead the show and you've also got to find a way of looking after this beast, because you're in every scene and you've also got to be prepared to find the character arc that it doesn't get monotonous. So that was a blessing. Once I started, the first 2 weeks is kind of finding your feet, talking to the director, because the approach to the how we shot it and the subject matter is kind of tricky. But once we got past those first 2 weeks, it felt like there was a rhythm to it. And because of the intensity of the shoot, it was scene done, next scene, every scene of the day. It kind of, that carried me. So I lent into the kind of chaotic nature of, it felt like a theatre show to an extent, when, especially if you do a one-man play, you step on stage, and then you're spat out the other side at the end of the show. And the in-between is a bit of a blur, because you're just moving along. You don't have time to go to a green room or to go to the side of the stage to think about, well, how did that scene go? Or to kind of question yourself. So that job, in comparison to all, maybe all the guest roles, was a real blessing for me as an actor, to be able to find a rhythm and that cliche thing of forgetting that you're shooting a TV series. You're just with that character, I think.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I love that. Getting more anxious about a handful of lines as a guest character than carrying an entire show about a guy spiraling into psychosis. And Crisis is an absolutely incredible series, and I want to get more into that in a second. But I actually saw you in Kledai before that, or in English, The One That Got Away. And your character, Ryan, is a drug dealer. He's got a sort of stalker situation with his ex. He breaks into that woman's home and ties her up and steals her car. So he's not really someone you should feel bad for. He's not exactly an upstanding citizen. But at the same time, with him being the prime suspect in these women's murders, you pretty much know right away that he's not responsible for that. So you do end up feeling a little bad for him and empathizing with him a bit, which is an interesting sensation because he doesn't actually deserve any sympathy. Because whether or not he killed those women, he's still a total creep. And yet you played it in a way that did make him somewhat empathetic.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of those detective shows where someone's done something really bad and then you're kind of put in the frame of being a suspect, I always try to find that empathy towards how they've ended up in that situation. So in terms of Claire Dine playing Ryan, in that case, it was a matter of kind of finding that vulnerability, really, even though he's pushing back in an interrogation scene, trying to show, you know, slight cracks that he's actually aware of, that he's in a bit of a hole and kind of showing that. And I suppose we'll go back to the point of not trying to overperform. I'm always trying to learn, getting signals off writers or producers or directors on the day, maybe being able to ask questions of, be more open to ask them if they want more or less, and then maybe giving more options as well. But because I think that comes over time at kind of experience and stuff. And I did Claire Dye quite soon after Crisis. So I think that helped as well, having that bulk of work, because sometimes you can kind of get swept up in the whole being on set and filming. And if I'm being honest, the body of my work is kind of in theatre. So I've only been doing a lot more screen work in the last 3 years. So Crisis was a good example of relaxing into that medium a bit more. And with Claire Dye, as you said, Wales is quite small. I had the same crew. So stepping onto set, I knew everybody. So there was no breaking of the ice saying, oh, this is the DOP. So I felt really relaxed and comfortable to be able to lean into maybe suggestions that I had. And in this case, a kind of different to maybe when I was doing Hinterland like 10 years ago, where I was too afraid to step outside the script at all. I was kind of leaning back and thinking that I needed to get some signals from the director. And in Claire Dye's case, it was about, oh, no, you can push it a bit more, really. Because I knew that the cast and crew had been on that shoot for 3.5 months and you can't kind of rock up and try to take over the set floor, really. So
yeah, exactly. And with Sean even, who I know you've acted with before, actually directing Claire Dye, was that a weird shift at all, going from co-actors to him kind of running the set? Or were you able to just fall into that new dynamic easily enough?
Yeah, I think Sean's a brilliant director, and he directed 3 episodes of Crisis as well. Yeah. So we had that relationship in terms of director-actor role, and we've had experiences of working together in the past. But more than anything, it's the fact that he's an actor himself, so he knows what to say or suggest. He knows kind of the journey from start, middle, and end to help an actor with finding a little tricky corner to go around, or something's not quite sitting right with the scene. So no, that was great, you know.
Oh, that's nice. So it sounds like they kept things pretty smooth and comfortable on set, especially on these more intense productions.
Yeah, so if it's funny, like working with different directors, I don't really use any, I would say, any particular methods that I stick to. I think it's a job-to-job basis in terms of what the subject matter is. And it can kind of, especially when you're filming, can come down to, you might be having a bad day, but sometimes you think about leaning into that if you're angry or frustrated, if you think it's going to serve the scene well. It's a bit of a happy mistake, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, that totally makes sense. I remember doing that back when I was acting, and I definitely do that with my writing too. Even if in the moment I'm having a bad time, in retrospect, it's kind of great to take whatever you're feeling in real life and just channel it into something else.
Yeah.
But Crisis was an amazing show. I think that's probably the first Welsh show that I've watched that's not really like a crime show in some way. It's just more of an emotional drama. And oh my God, that was a hell of a ride. But when I Google the title, Google Translate is telling me that it means crisps in English. Is that just like a total mistranslation?
Right. I might be wrong, but crisis is a Welsh translation for crisis. But there is a word in Welsh called creision, which is the Welsh word for crisps.
Okay. So it sounds like Google's extraordinarily confused.
You know, creision is fine. It is a bit of a weird, tormented series, but
yeah, I think it was a missed opportunity there.
Yes.
But on a more serious note, because it is a very serious, dark show, you really did such an excellent job of building the tension and taking this character that starts out a bit lighter and more humorous into real darkness. And he's such a good guy, but we're just watching him spiral. And it kind of makes the viewer feel as out of control as Jamie feels. What are some of the difficulties of playing a character like that? Because you just got more distressed and more intense from one episode to the next. And then after a point, one scene to the next. It was just this relentless downward fall for the character.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
How do you approach that as an actor? Do you have to work yourself up for those scenes and put yourself mentally and physically into some sort of state of distress, then kind of come down afterwards? Or are you able to keep yourself pretty separate from the character and just switch back and forth between takes? Because it was disturbingly realistic, and that sense of distress and confusion came through so strongly.
Well, there was two things. The fact that I was in every scene, but obviously you shoot it not in chronological order. So in the first week, we had maybe scenes from the first few eps, and then in the latter episodes, which then I had to kind of track through the emotional chart of it. So I learned all the scripts, obviously. But then I also, to an extent, without me kind of knowing, I only after looking back at the job, that I kind of learned the shooting schedule. So I could see larger mountains in front of me in week three or four, which I knew that they were going to be more challenging scenes, and I'd be able to track it from scene to scene and day to day basis. There are some scenes in which kind of I'm far from being a method actor, but there were some scenes where I felt that I needed to detach from the set environment where you're mingling with all the crew. But I did like to do that a lot on Crisis, because you can't put yourself in a dark corner for the whole shoot.
Oh, no, definitely not.
There was one scene maybe where my character decides that he's going to walk away from the family home and he probably wouldn't see his family again. And we shot this one scene really for the whole day, but we had trouble with sunlight. So we were like, it was so long. So I was trying to kind of separate myself from the rest of the cast for that particular scene, which I felt that I needed to do. And I didn't really decide what that moment would be when the character Jamie walks up to the doorstep of that family and then he decides to walk away. So I suppose it's an element of a build-up, but not knowing what that would feel like until we actually shot. I loved it, even though it doesn't look like I'm loving it. But as an actor, yeah, it was such a challenge, but so rewarding in terms of, I suppose I like throwing myself down a well, if that makes sense to me, to put myself through that torment. But
I get that. I love it. Now, did you know the whole story going into it? Because in my experience, scripts for series are normally given out episode by episode or a few at a time. And most people don't even know where the story is going until they start filming each one. Was that different for you? Did you get all the scripts or at least a breakdown of the full story from the start? Or were you surprised by the very dark direction it went in?
I had the first two episodes and the general premise of the show. I had eps 1 to 3, and then we shot those eps in the first block. But there was a slight delay in terms of the ending, really. And I was fine with that. I've told them to hold off slightly, that I wasn't going to project forward in terms of kind of changing how I felt in a particular scene, because I knew what was going to happen at the end. To be honest, because I was in every scene, I did want to have an element of knowing in what general direction Jamie was going for me to be able to track it through that. Well, the portrayal wouldn't be quite monotone, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
There's a bit of an in-joke on set with costume and makeup department where gradually Jamie's look gets more disheveled, and we had like a grading of 1 to 5 of what.
Yes.
But I think that naturally caught up with me anyway, just the fact that I was on for 73 days. So by the end, I don't think the makeup department needed to do much the final few days.
Oh my God, that's rough. And it's not like he started looking out super clean cut in the first place. He was pretty disheveled from the start. So that's saying something about the state of you by the end there.
Very disheveled from the start, yes.
But it was an excellent show. And like I said, it really caught me off guard just how dark it got, which I think is actually very important, because a lot of shows about mental illness tend to gloss these things over. But Crisis did not shy away from the reality of what can happen to people who slip through the cracks in the system. And from the start, it just hits you repeatedly with those little twists and disturbing realizations. The end of the first episode, I practically jumped off the couch and yelled at the TV. Oh my God. And it was, you know, wow, okay, that's where this is going. So it was pretty unflinching in its portrayal of someone going down that rabbit hole, being unable to tell what's real, what's not, and not getting the help they need, or maybe not even being aware that they need help at all. Did you talk over the topic with the showrunners, or did you do any of your own research into, you know, like psychosis and the mental health system in the UK or Wales? Did you do any sort of preparation in that way?
Yeah, so before we started shooting, I did a bit of initial research with establishments where they help within the health system, people with mental health. So in terms of how a psychiatric nurse would go about their day-to-day work, what it kind of entailed and stuff, and then being a nurse in the series itself, but then kind of turning from nurse to patient and dealing with his own issues. Mm-hmm. Kind of did as much research as I could. And then I tend to try to park it, and hopefully it kind of reemerges in the performance. You kind of try to deal with it on a scene-to-scene basis, because an actor can walk on set and force you to feel something different. But we had someone with us on the show guiding us correct procedural stuff that a nurse would do. And there are some scenes where Jamie's at his worst point, and you think he's deep in psychosis, and I've got to find what that is and how I get there. But then I kind of realise that I don't really need to. I've just got to think the opposite of that, because I felt that when someone's in deep psychosis, I've got to just not think about the mechanics of it and be kind of totally lost, not knowing what's going to happen. So there was a scene where my lowest ebb, and I don't know where I've been and what I'm thinking. So for that scene, I decided that I didn't really want to do any rehearsal. I didn't really want to know if any dialogue tweaks had been made beforehand. So kind of a bit of a, I wouldn't say it was a risk, but it was quite nice to be able to step on set for that moment and not know what was be asked of me, really. And hopefully it worked, because then I was sat there slightly lost, not knowing what was going to happen with that jeopardy. So,
oh, it definitely worked. Definitely. The power of those later episodes is in that growing emotional chaos and confusion and how lost Jamie is.
Yeah.
One of the most disturbing scenes to me was where he goes into his boss's office and she's basically gaslighting him. And at first I believed that, but then I was like, wait, but somebody else saw it happen. And you start to feel like, where's my mind now watching this? Because it's so much from his perspective. And you're really getting that feeling of confusion and I don't know what's real and what's not. And I just thought that was so brilliantly handled by you, by the rest of the cast, by the showrunners. It was very well done.
That was the scene I was alluding to, actually. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
I know one of the things that was interesting to me about it from the beginning was that breaking the fourth wall, so that Jamie's really like pulling you into his story and talking to you as the viewer directly. But then it got less and less as it went on. Was that something that you talked about with the showrunners at all? Like, did they give you any insight into why they reduced that fourth wall breaking and eventually got rid of it altogether? Was that an intentional choice to just not break the moment when he's really deep in psychosis so that it doesn't kind of disrupt the story? Or was it meant to reflect his fall into that mental state? Or is that something you guys discussed at all?
Yeah, we discussed it when we were reading through the latter episodes. You know, I did ask if there were moments where we could reintroduce it. But I think it was a reflection of the character disappearing bit by bit and moving further away from the audience, because there's voiceovers, there's Jamie talking to his dead friend, Barry, as well.
Yeah.
And there's also observation scenes where he's recalling scenes and being able to step back into those scenes and watch himself in those moments. So I tried to put it as all of these were connected in the first few episodes in terms of him trying to grapple with his downfall, and they're all on the same frequency, and they get by bit. As he's losing control, he's losing those outputs to be able to try to make sense of them. So by the end, it's just him on his own and he's moving further away. And then eventually he walks away from his family.
Wow.
I was tempted, because I did ask the producers, could there be one last breaking of the fourth wall before he makes that decision of knowing what he's about to do?
Right.
But we decided to opt out of that. And I think it was probably better, yeah.
Well, the show completely shattered me, and I've been recommending it to everyone who'll listen. So I'm really hoping for it to come to one of the major streaming sites at some point here so that it can be enjoyed by a wider audience, because it's a great piece of television.
Oh, thank you.
Now, before we wrap up, I have a totally random question for you. I saw, let's say, an interesting video on YouTube.
Oh, God.
No, it's not that bad. I'd love to know what possessed you to serenade your friends at their wedding with a Welsh-flavored rendition of an infamous Tenacious D song.
Ah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, wow. So I was one of three best men at a friend's wedding. And I just thought I put a really Westwhalian farming spin on a Tenacious D song.
As a surprise.
Yeah, he didn't know about it. Obviously, nobody at the wedding knew about it. So I just thought I'd really ham it up. Yeah, it's very bizarre. But I think the bride and groom did enjoy it on the day.
I mean, it was brilliant. It's been stuck in my head for days and it keeps making me laugh.
Tenacious D in a Welsh version, or like a Westwhalian version. Yeah, very niche.
Yeah, very, very, very niche. And on that note, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next. Do you have anything you're working on now, film-wise, or are you still doing more theater overall?
Well, these days it's just a matter of trying to keep working.
Yep.
But yeah, I shot a film last autumn. I'm shooting another film next month in September. But I do have a bit of an itch to be on stage again, because I kind of miss it. Because I'm thinking back of some of the productions I've done before, and I always think that, oh, I wouldn't be able to do that now, be able to step on. Sometimes when you haven't done it for a bit, like everything, it's like first day at school, isn't it? But the dream would be to have as much variety as possible. But I would like to keep doing more screen work and maybe play a happier, not a
Right,
torment.
not a lost soul in an asylum or jail.
But they're fun in a weird way to play or try to tackle.
Oh, for sure. Now, those can be the most interesting. But as far as theater goes, is there a production you've done that was extra special to you? Like, do you have a favorite? I know you played Alan Turing in To Kill a Machine twice. And based on what I've seen of the staging and reviews, and there was some rehearsal footage online too, it seemed like that would have been a really interesting experience.
That's probably up there with one of my best theatre experiences in terms of, again, Alan Turing is a bit of a tormented soul,
Yeah.
the injustices that he had to face. So that's a highlight for me to be able to play that character, that role, and tell that story. I remember when we were doing it, we took it to Edinburgh Fringe Festival and then to London to the King's Head Theatre. And the director always wanted to mention to people that we'd done a version of Alan Turing's story before Benedict Cumberbatch did his big film of The Imitation Game. But I think most people saw that first rather than our little theatre play.
Oh,
But
but it sounds like it was an amazing project.
yeah, that was a great challenge and highlight for me to do that show. Yeah.
And that was a play, right? Not a musical.
Yeah, a play. Yeah, a musical, that would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but a musical about Alan Turing.
Yeah,
That'd
yeah.
be something. I'd watch that. Do you prefer theater or live performance in general? Or have you switched a bit to enjoying the non-linear nature of acting in film?
I think having a live audience, that jeopardy is always, it does give you a different energy than being on set and eating too much biscuits and drinking too much coffee, I think.
That kind of sums it up, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it sounds really simple, but it's kind of the case, really. And you were talking about having maybe a day where you feel tired or you're in a theatre run, but then you stood in the wings thinking that an audience is sat out there and you're catapulted into a character or a world, and that the energy you get from a live audience is kind of all that fear, immediate fear of something that can go wrong. It kind of pushes you forward, really. So doing a piece of theatre would be nice, I think.
I think one of the great things about theater is that it's so dynamic and always evolving from one performance to the next. Like, if you screw up or if something goes wrong, you just roll with it and it becomes part of the show, which can lead to maybe an awkward moment and a quick recovery or a really amazing improvisation that only happens that one time and only that audience gets to see it. And it becomes this really special memory. Even though it can be nerve-wracking, that's one of the things I love about live performance. You just kind of embrace the chaos and see what happens.
Yeah, and probably if you've been doing a theatre run for maybe 3 or 4 weeks and that something is kind of misplaced or you've missed a beat or a line, it's like a little kickstarter. You kind of recalibrate really quickly and it gets something new and special out of that. So I think you've got to lean into that. And even mistakes like on, screen, if you don't have to cut, are quite a bit of a blessing, I think, because you're kind of forced into being really live with the other actors, which, like, most enjoyable scenes that I've been in, maybe a few in Crisis as well, where little things didn't go to plan from script onto set, were for the better.
Very true. And most people watching aren't even going to be aware of those things. But some of the most memorable moments, whether on camera or on stage, have been these kinds of happy mistakes that I always love seeing and hearing about, and that you really can't replicate because it was so in the moment. I'll certainly be watching out for whatever's coming down the line. I know you've had a number of leading roles in theater, but after seeing you in a bunch of guest and supporting roles in film, it was really nice to see how strongly you carried a show as intense and heavy as Crisis. And I obviously hope that leads to more, maybe something that involves less criminal behavior or less personal torment, like you said.
Yeah, maybe I can get a role as a wedding singer in a sitcom and I can really channel, you know, that YouTube video a bit more.
Yes, I am there. I'll watch that. I've seen some clips of you doing comedy and it was really funny. So I'd love to see a project from you like that at some point. But anyway, I again appreciate you doing this. I've really enjoyed talking to you, but I'm definitely petitioning for Crisis to get picked up by one of the big international streaming platforms. So hopefully that'll happen at some point because it's a genuinely good show that should be seen outside the UK. I know that since it doesn't have an English version, it doesn't immediately have that international distribution, but if shows like 35 Days and Dalamesh and more recently Baria can be released as they are for English-speaking audiences, there's no reason a show like Crisis can't do the same. So I've got my fingers crossed for that. And in the meantime, I hope things go well for you. I think you're super talented and have done great work over the years. And I hope you get a lot more chances to show that in other films or series. So I'll certainly be keeping an eye out for your next project and very much hoping to see you in something new soon.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Once again, that was Gwydion Rees, and I've included a whole bunch of links in the description so that you can see trailers and streaming options for several shows that he's been in, as well as the trailer for his play To Kill a Machine, even though that was from a while back, because the staging and concept are just so interesting. I've linked to several of his musical performances as well. It's all great work from everybody involved, so please give them a watch. As we discussed, Crisis is not yet available outside the UK, but if you're in the UK or have access to those channels, it's currently available on S4C and BBC iPlayer. So I recommend you check it out as soon as you get a chance. And for people who don't have access to those services, more and more Welsh language content has been coming to platforms like Netflix and Amazon. So if you use platforms like BritBox, Acorn, Netflix, Amazon, or in Australia, iView, I encourage you to put in requests for them to pick up the series, and hopefully one of them will. The more we can put pressure on platforms here in the US, Canada, and other English-speaking countries to play these types of shows in their original language, the more good series we'll have access to. So every request can help, and if you take the time to do that, I appreciate the effort. And to everyone, thank you so much for listening to The Art of Imagination, and I hope that you'll join me again next time.